You are listening to the Post-Atomic Horror Podcast with Ron Algar Watt and Matt Robotham. Episode 2, featuring The Cage and Where No Man Has Gone Before.
Told you we'd be back, and here we are.
We're nothing if not good to our word.
Good to our word?
Good to our word. It's a sentence. Look it up.
I will
in
look
that,
it up.
The big book of sentences that exist.
Very well. Okay, this week we are starting our review of episodes. So no more us telling you about ourselves. You know everything you need to know about us. Everything else remains a mystery because we are mysterious.
Ooh.
I'm kidding. There's no such thing as mysterious. So I went back and forth for a long time on where we should actually start. It seems obvious, but is really not.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is, and I may be retreading things that those of you familiar with Star Trek already know, but just to quickly go over this. They did a pilot in 1964 called The Cage, which had no familiar characters in it except Mr. Spock.
Who did not look familiar at all,
no.
Really.
Nimoy played him. He had pointy ears beyond that.
Yeah.
Nothing
The Spock of then has very, very little to do with the Spock of today.
Right. But after that, the network said no. But sort of an unprecedented thing at that point, they said, give it another try. And so they did a second pilot, where No Man Has Gone Before. And most of the familiar cast was there at that point. They were still missing a few key players. But for the most part, you had Kirk, you had Sulu, Scotty was there. Is that it?
I think that might be it, actually. Oh, there was no McCoy.
Right. And Chekhov wouldn't be till season two. Now,
applying for a credit card.
The reason I was so conflicted is because when you buy these on DVD or on Blu-ray or whatever, The Cage is actually not included as episode one. They actually tack it on the end of season three as sort of an extra.
To justify your purchase of season three.
Yeah, because season three is not the best. But the problem I run into there is I only own the first two seasons of the original series on the Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't bought season three yet. And so I didn't have The Cage. And I was like, well, maybe we should just do that. But I have a lot to say about Captain Pike and that sort of thing. So I think we should.
Yeah.
Fortunately, the internet provides. The YouTube was able to compensate where my collection has failed. So
yes, links will not be provided in the show notes because we need to keep them there so we can watch the rest of the series.
Yeah, here's the thing I wanted to mention very quickly. Our voice guy Dave, very good friend of mine, who does all our voice stuff for our other show as well. Recorded the lengthy disclaimer you hear at the end of the show, but in his wonderful, delightful, passive aggressive way, he labeled the file "fucking obnoxious." What did he call it? "Fucking obnoxious disclaimer." "Fucking ridiculous disclaimer." What he may not remember is in the earliest days of the internet, in the sort of the mid 90s. Paramount actually delivered cease and desist orders to any like GeoCities, Angel Fire, whatever pages of like fan fiction or whatever. Like if you typed the word Star Trek, they would sue you. I'm barely exaggerating there.
You guys seen this? They're writing stories where Kirk and Spock have relations.
No. Get the lawyers. I mean, they were, you know, the reputation Disney has now, they were like that then. I don't know if it's improved, but it put a scare in me. So that is why.
Mm.
That's why you don't see a lot of artwork. That is why you don't hear a lot of music. I'm being overly cautious because lawyers frighten me.
Better safe than sued by Harlan Ellison.
Better safe than Sulu?
Yeah. Oh my.
All right. Let's get to this.
All right.
So I watched The Cage, which the thing that impressed me the most about this episode, having seen some of the original series before, is just how much more extravagant it is. The budget is significantly bigger. The effects, even though they came a few years before, look uniformly better.
That's a great looking episode.
It really is. And it has more of, I would say, more in common with like the '50s, with like a late '50s. It really reminds me of Forbidden Planet, which is one of my favorite classic sci-fi movies. It's got that great sort of retro. I mean, it wasn't retro then, but you know, the retro futuristic feel
that
to it.
Cutting edge technology of the 1960s.
Right. Exactly. And it's weird to think that they spent way more money on this first episode than they did on, like, I think all of season three combined or something. That's that's a made up fact. But
well, the entire budget was dumped into Shatner,
basically. So the episode opens and we don't get any space, the final frontier. So how do we know, you know, where we are? We have no idea what their mission is, what the ship is. We're just expected to figure it out on our own. And somehow,
space, you can tell because there's stars there.
Well, see, they expected you to do some work.
Mm-hmm.
They expected you, the viewer, to connect the dots, and we did, and we weren't confused, and the network thought that we would be, but there you go. They open with this great shot that I don't think the series proper ever did, where they zoom in from space to the top of the Enterprise and then to where the bridge is. Like, you actually see where the bridge is.
I really like that.
I do, too. Like, I love any time you can see how the inside of the ship relates to the outside of the ship. Like, it doesn't just look like a model that way.
Mm.
But is it really a smart place to put the most important part of the ship right on the top? Like, protruding? That seems like a bad idea to me.
We are the men of the Federation, and we don't care that we're using the place where we keep all of our bridge officers as a hood ornament.
There's a big neon arrow pointing to, target photons here. So we get our first look at the crew. It's Spock, but he, like Matt said, he's not really Spock yet. He's a
happy
a lot.
Spock.
Yeah, he's really happy. He yells a lot.
Yells. He smiles.
Really strange. But the Spock of then is this mysterious female character called Number One.
Mm-hmm.
Not Riker. She doesn't put her leg up.
Well, I mean, if the show had gone to series,
yeah, possibly she would be putting her leg up by Spock. But Majel Barrett, who later became the Mrs. Roddenberry.
And then a lot of other people.
Oh, yeah. Nurse Chapel, Luxana Troy, the voice of the Enterprise.
Voice of the ship.
Yeah. She plays Number One. So hot.
But
she was really the Spock of then. She was the coldly logical, like, you know, sort of stern, like, she was the walking computer or what, you know, whatever the dumb expression that they used was.
There's a great line in there when Pike is on the bridge and he's just had one of the yeomans give him the Star Trek notepad with pen they were always so fond of.
And in the Kirk series they would hand like a UPS package thing.
Oh, that's right.
But in this it was actually still paper, which was
weird. It was paper on a just on a board.
Yep, on a clipboard.
On a clipboard, thank you. And he says, just not used to the idea of women on the bridge. And he looks at Number One and goes, not including you, of course.
Yeah, you don't count. You're not.
You're different.
Yeah.
Not a woman.
So they spend two full minutes evading a radio wave. I was really unclear as to what.
Yeah, I wasn't really. I didn't want to say anything, but like, I'm not really sure what was happening there.
No, I mean, there was a lot of really solid, like, science fiction filmmaking going on there, but I didn't have any clue what was happening there. There's supposedly like a distress call, but Pike continues on his mission and ignores it and decides to have a drink with his doctor, who was about 9,000 years old.
Captain, I brought you your whiskey.
I'm not really clear on what they were going after. I guess it was sort of the beginning of what they did with Bones. Mm-hmm. He's the captain's, you know, friend and confidant as well as the doctor. But really, it just looked like a creepy old man brought him a suitcase full of gin. And on top of that, he reminded me a lot of Uncle Charlie from My Three Sons, which was really unsettling.
One of the things I sort of got from Pike was that he didn't really get along well with the rest of the crew.
Yeah, I think they sort of revived that more with Picard. Like, it was less of a Kirk thing and more of a Picard thing where he was, you know, the loneliness of command, the distance of, you know, that sort of thing, which was cool. It would have been a cool thing. He commiserates with the doctor, which who was not actually named. I thought his name was Piper. That's actually the doctor in the next episode. So
no, his name in the script was just incredibly old doctor.
And we get a little exposition. Some people died on their previous mission on one of the many Rigels that you will hear in the in the series, Rigel 7.
The Rigel galaxy is enormous.
Jesus. I mean, I can't count how many Rigels there are. They just, every time they need a new planet, have we named Rigel 12 yet? Oh, Rigel 12. Well, very good.
Just off the top of my head, it's got the sex planet and a planet where they, where there are still swords and armor.
Yeah, and that's what he is talking about here. They lost some people in some weird castle thing. I don't know.
I really like that sort of idea. Just like, we've been doing this for a while. We just had this adventure. People are dead, but we're not, like, that's it. It happened. You didn't get to see it.
Yeah. And again, you get that sense of, you know, we're not going to necessarily explain this to you. You just, you're expected to follow along. And in 1964, that was actually a big deal. There wasn't anything really like this on TV.
No.
I mean, I don't think you get some Star Trek fans really going on and on about how revolutionary the show was and all that and world changing. And I think they go a little too far, but they're really, in terms of what was on TV, I definitely think they broke some new ground.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, in this scene, you get the first appearance of, I'm responsible for, insert number here, lives on this ship. And he's, Pike's pondering quitting. He's like, I don't know if I got it in me anymore. I don't know if I can do this. This is hard. And we get the first sort of appearance of the whole, no, you're destined to captain a starship. This is, you know, this is what you should be doing, not anything else.
He also briefly considers becoming an Orion slave trader.
Yeah, and I think the reason they threw that in there was they wanted to establish later on when we see the green Orion slave girl.
Yeah, it, not exactly the kind of thing I would give to the captain to consider doing. Especially, like, you told me that you thought they cut out a scene where he talks about how he doesn't approve of it. And
I thought about that, and either they cut out a scene or I just remembered wrong, or maybe I read a novelization. I don't even know, but I could swear Pike found that whole thing distasteful. But maybe that was just me reading that into the character. I don't know.
Now, the original Pike found it extremely tasteful.
So they get an update, like, after he decides, maybe I'm going to quit. I don't know. You know, being a captain is hard. Boo-hoo. An update. There's survivors on this planet after all. Like, it's not just a fake distress call. So so they charge in, and the warp effect they do is a bit cheesy. There's this sort of half dissolve where they play the entire theme music, and
it was weird.
Yeah, I mean,
like, I didn't dislike it. I just thought it was a weird choice.
They just sort of half, like, they had a shot of space and a shot of the bridge at the same time, sort of half dissolved into each other, and just they played the entire theme music. It was like, I didn't really get the sense that they were at warp exactly.
Star Trek chicks just wailing away.
But the shot as they approached the planet was actually quite good. Looked a bit better than on the original series, like on the rest of the series. And when they beam down, the transporter effect looks good, and the actual planet, as far as sound stages go, not too bad. All the background paintings, there was a lot more detail, I think, in those than in the than later on.
Planet looked just gorgeous.
Yeah, it did.
For that sort of paper mache 1960s traditional planet look, you know, it looked really good.
Yeah, absolutely. Probably the best you could expect it to look on television, I would say. They find these weird vibrating blue plants, which makes Spock smile even more for some reason. I have no
idea. Captain, I've never been more delighted in my life. Look at this.
Wee! I think he actually said wee at one point. So they find this survivor camp of old men. But never mind that, because hello, nurse. There's this...
I love how they present her. Finally, we're saved at last. Oh, look who it is.
Yeah, and then, like, you might as well just start the sexy sax music right there. And the thankfully, they hadn't really started the whole, like, soft focus, smearing the lens in Vaseline thing for other woman characters yet. But had this been a Kirk episode, they totally would have done that.
Yep, would have done a close-up on him. I've never seen such beauty in all my days.
Right. So, and then we sort of cut back and we see these awesome, probably the coolest looking aliens in the original series, with these sinister bulbous heads. Watching on.
And they've got these veins in the forehead that just throb.
Yeah.
It's a really cool effect.
It is. They look at least as good as, like I say, anything in the original series. And I would even put them next to some of the better, like, next gen like prosthetics. They're really well designed. I think they cast little people or something like that.
Yeah.
And it just gives them this creepy look. It's great. But they capture him, of course.
The kidnapping of them, like when they kidnap Pike, I just was really delighted by that. They zap him and then drag him into a cave.
Yep. And then the crew for the next little while try to shoot their way in for, I don't know, 7 years or so. Nothing happens for a while, but the story really shifts to Pike at that point.
Yeah.
Where they're watching him, they're talking with their minds, and you get the first appearance of many of an alien looking down at a human and saying, God, you're so primitive. I mean, this show, it's no wonder nerds have such low self-esteem, because our best show is constantly telling us how, you know, how we're beneath everyone and how just we're nothing. We're so primitive and terrible.
Ah, humanity. You guys suck.
Yeah. I mean, come on. Where's the self-esteem?
Look how small your stupid heads are.
And then there's this great line where they say, thousands of us are probing its mind. Which, yeah. So they send him through the whole bunch of, like simulated experiences that fight and a picnic or something. And the whole thing is that it all comes down to this chick, Vina, this blonde, is trying to tempt him to stay there.
Accept
this false reality and stay there with her.
Yeah. It's unsettling.
It is, and not in a badly written way. Not in a they didn't know what they were doing in the '60s way. Just
intentionally unsettling. Yeah. It's just like we aliens would like you to fuck this girl in front of us.
Yeah,
and he can provide any number of simulations.
He refuses. He just he resists with all his strength. At one point, they actually punish him by sending him to hell. Do you remember that?
That was a neat looking effect too.
Yeah, they tried to make him eat and he refused, and so suddenly he was around all these fiery caves and just,
guy in a devil costume dancing around in the background.
So they continue trying to tempt him with all these different images and so forth, and suddenly Vina turns into a Green Orion slave girl.
And somewhere a young Bob goes.
And for those of you unfamiliar, regular guest on our other show, old friend of mine, I've known him for nigh on 20 years now, Mark Bosco, a.k.a. Bob, really has a thing for green girls. And we'll probably have him on this show at some point to talk about that, maybe when we get to an episode featuring a green girl. But he's got a thing for her and for She-Hulk and for, I think there was another one. There was
that other green girl, yeah. You know.
It's a very strange and very specific fetish, but you know, I can see it, because it was a creepy scene. It was these leering guys like, yeah, so they don't mind if you take advantage of them here. It's like, yeah.
And Pike's got this weird like tinfoil robe thing.
Yeah, I will give this episode a lot of credit though. There were a lot of scene changes. There were a lot of aliens. Like, not everything looked great, but there was a huge variety. Like, you didn't just get your standard two or three guys of the same alien race. Like, you had a lot of costumes, a lot of prosthetics. Some looked better than others, but they really gave you this sort of broad scope of, this is an alien landscape, and they're really jumping him around to a lot of different places and not just different parts of the same room. So, you know, giving it that, it was actually pretty cool. So the Enterprise crew decide to beam down and rescue him. But for some reason, only the women beam down. And then it comes down to, we realize that these aliens, the Talosians, basically want him to breed. They want him as breeding stock. And if he doesn't want Vina, then they offer him three choices.
Look, we got plenty of options here, man. You know what? The blonde, we got a brunette, we got a redhead.
Yeah, they bring him number one and they bring him as yeoman. So yeah, basically he, like you mentioned, the standard, you know, the choice that's followed man since time immemorial, blonde, brunette, or redhead. He refuses to choose, which, hey, that would be difficult for me as well, man.
I gotta work with these women, okay?
They reveal these really creepy, like, number one apparently has fantasies about him. And what was it they said about the yeoman?
It's like she thought you were unattainable, but now she thinks you might be attainable.
No, but then there was the bit where, like, she's really filled with, I don't know what it was. God. She's particularly virile.
Feminine vigor.
That's it.
She's full of feminine vigor.
She's a horn dog, is basically what they were saying.
Uh-huh.
And Pike, to his credit, is still having none of it. And I, being a lesser man, I definitely could not have resisted that, but good on him. And he finally grabs a Talosian, threatens him. And then suddenly the Talosians realize, to their shock, that humans don't like captivity.
Wow.
That's strange. This race doesn't like to be, you know, put in a cage. Huh?
You know, maybe we should think about asking all those other aliens we caged if, you know, they like being captive.
Nah, they seem really surprised by it. Human, what? They don't like it? Are you nuts?
But we got you this nice glass thing and a wheel to run in.
So he basically dooms them to extinction and leaves Vina there. And the big reveal at the end is that she's old and ugly and scarred. And
I love that it's not just that. It's that when they crashed on the planet, she was barely alive and they put her together wrong.
Yeah, they didn't really know how to reassemble her. So, yeah, they put like her ass where her shoulder goes. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah, she was a mess. But she decides to stay in the illusion world and runs off into the sunset with a fake Captain Pike.
See, I watched this last night, and first of all, this is a very Star Trek-y thing. You know, you got like the horror, the horrible truth of reality with its realness, or living in like a fantasy world. And usually Star Trek goes for the, well, I really need to, you know, I can't not live in the real world, no matter how often.
You had the Shoreleaf planet, you had the holodeck, you had the Nexus. I mean, time and again, it's been a recurring theme.
Yeah. I don't know if it's because it's the pilot or they were just doing something different, but they don't go with that this time. It's just like, well, you know what? Sometimes it's okay to not be in the real world.
Well, if your life is horrible and you're living in tremendous pain,
mm-hmm.
then sometimes it's better just to escape to this fantasy world, I guess, is what they're saying. And we'll come back to that when we get to the menagerie, actually.
And the wonderful fate of Captain Pike.
Beep. One final thing I did want to mention before we move to the next episode is I really like Captain Pike. I think, you know, I'm not going too far out on a limb here saying that Jeffrey Hunter's a better actor than Shatner. Yeah. I think the character would have developed a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. And I think even seeing him in the recent movie, Fake Star Trek, as I call it, having Bruce Greenwood playing him was fucking fantastic. Basically making him Kirk's mentor was a really solid choice. And you pointed this out to me. You're more familiar with sort of the extended universe stuff, that there's very little material with Captain Pike just off having adventures. Like there's a few things here and there, but
I was actually surprised. There's so many series of books based on like characters who barely ever appeared in anything.
Yep.
There's almost nothing about Pike and his crew.
And we didn't get fully fleshed out characters of everyone, but I mean, you could definitely pick up what you have about Pike and what you have about Number One, and like maybe a young Spock, like retcon it so he's trying to be more human or something, you know, explain why he's laughing a lot. And you could really run with that. And I've read a couple of things here and there, but you know, there should be entire series of books about that or comics or something.
Yeah.
And, you know, if anyone's listening, I'm volunteering to write those because that guy's awesome.
So, and I mean, like, they really had, like, the beginnings of a crew you were interested in, you know?
Yeah. I mean, not a full crew, but three or four characters you could
And I mean, it was a pilot, too. Right. So, like,
even the second pilot really only had, like, two characters that stuck around that you cared about. The other two. Well, we'll get to that in a sec. Anything else on the cage before we move on?
I thought it was really interesting that once you get past Pike, the two main characters on the show are both women.
Yeah, they actually, that was one of the things that struck me about this, and to a lesser extent, the following pilot, was they were a bit more respectful of women, and I think, if I've read correctly, the network didn't like that.
Mm.
Like, the women wore pants, and there was a
Can't
woman first
that.
Officer, and you know, and then eventually we get to their campy woman captains, and everyone's in tiny short skirts.
Yep.
And, you know, the raging Riker horn dog in me loves the short skirts, but on the other hand, not terribly dignified.
Not exactly, no.
The well, feminist sympathizer in me says, well, you know, they could wear pants. So
there's no room in your world of Starfleet captains for a woman. Well, if she's sitting on the bridge and her ass is hanging out, I imagine the Klingons aren't going to take her too seriously.
All right. So then we moved on to the second pilot to
where no man has gone before.
Right.
We got Kirk showing up for the first time, playing chess with Spock. and crap.
Kirk with his incredibly thick eye makeup, especially in his first scene, just like purple eyeshadow just smeared on almost like a clown. It's ridiculous.
This is all I wanted, to be pretty.
And we get our first appearance of the 3D chess, the wacky, yep, crazy chess of the future.
Look, we're in the future now. We don't play regular chess. We play 3D chess. Look at all these levels.
This game has been good enough for Earth for the last 2,000 years, but nope. It's 200 years later. We got to have something different. We bore much more easily in the future.
3D Monopoly is also a lot of fun.
I hate playing as the 3D shoe.
Of course, the span of the game can take your entire lifetime.
No, they don't have money in the future, so it's really more of a novelty. Nobody takes it that seriously.
You play it with Ferengi.
Oh, well, there you go then. Human play Monopoly. All right.
Anyway, so we've got Kirk, we've got Spock actually doing something, and we have Kirk's bestest friend, Gary Mitchell.
Who?
Some dude who's just like,
yeah,
Kirk, you and I have been friends since the Academy.
Yeah,
let's have a time.
I've watched an awful lot of episodes and read a lot of books and never heard of no Gary Mitchell.
No, and I've talked about this before, like, I would like to have seen that more of this guy, you know? Like, he's supposed to be this big thing in Kirk's life, and, you know, spoiler alert, he dies at the end, and, you know, we never mentioned him again.
Yeah, it would have been nice to call back to that, like, oh, poor Gary Mitchell, or, like you mentioned in our pre-show, like, maybe in the new movie, just show him at the Academy or something.
Mm-hmm.
But nope, just one time, he was his greatest friend in the world and then disappeared.
Luckily, I have this new friend, Spock, who likes to play chess with me.
And then I got Bones to keep his ass in line. But no Bones yet.
No. Anyway, they find a barbecue floating in space.
They're going to find a lot of space junk through the course of the series.
Which is actually a marker from the SS Valiant. Its crew is entirely dead. Captain was whoever was last alive on it had been researching ESP, and then the captain ordered a self-destruct. So right. Kirk decides.
They were exploring the edge of the galaxy, which even the 60s effects looked pretty cool. But
the remastered one was
also quite good. I love those shots where the ship is really tiny and you see sort of the hugeness of space.
Yeah.
And you didn't get a lot of that in the series proper, but you got it here. So you could definitely see, you know, just how tiny and insignificant they are compared to where they are, which is.
Yeah. Now that evolved into, we're Americans exploring American space.
Yeah.
Oh, and we're also introduced to the new ship psychiatrist, Doctor. Is it Denner?
Elizabeth Daner, I think it is.
Daner.
Sally Kellerman, who was absolutely adorable back then. And do a Google search on her now, because yikes.
Yeah.
Time has not been kind
to her. The years in plastic surgery have not been kind to her.
Yeah. The expression, time is the fire in which we burn, well, there's your there's your proof.
Her face is covered in third-degree time burns. So the ship gets, like, electrocuted or attacked by the edge of the universe or something. The computers explode quite nicely.
As always.
Yep. No, the exploding computers looked really good in this for some reason.
Yeah, they did. I think they still had a bit more money for this pilot than they did in the series as well. Like, not as much as the cage, but still more than in the series proper.
Spend it on blasting caps.
Well, the bridge looked a little more polished, I thought. A little less like props, you know what I mean? Mm.
And then we get both Mitchell and Denner get sort of silvery and flash back and forth, and Mitchell's eyes get all silvery.
That looked really cool, especially for a practical effect from 66 or 67 or whenever that was. It was surprisingly cool.
Like, do you know what they did with the contact lenses? Did they have contact lenses?
They did have colored contacts. I got the impression that either they were trying to hide his silver eyes or the actor playing Gary Mitchell was really uncomfortable because he spent a lot of times in his close-ups with his eyes almost closed.
Mm.
And I get the feeling that they must have been super painful for him.
Yeah, that actor died of shredded corneas later in life.
One thing they did establish before that beam hit the ship was that that ESP is a real thing. Scientific fact, as Daner says, which is really it is.
Yep.
And people with high levels of ESP potential, which happened to be her and Gary Mitchell, were the ones who were affected.
Ah, yes, that explains that.
Which I thought was odd because Vulcans, and I guess they just hadn't figured this out yet, Vulcans are like half-assed telepathic. Shouldn't it have affected Spock as well?
Nope, his Vulcan mind shield was up. Ah. See, what you don't know is that in addition to extra eyelids, Vulcans have a thin film over their brains to protect it from the edge of the galaxy.
Listen, aliens in Star Trek can grow vestigial body parts whenever the plot demands it. That's just how it goes.
Worf needs a new spine.
No, a new heart.
Was it a new heart? I thought he needed a new spine, too.
Well, he needed a spine, but when he was on the operating table, his heart started, or his heart stopped, and his second heart started. So it was about his spine, but what saved him was his, oh, right, Klingons have a second heart. Wink, wink.
How did we not remember that?
Yeah. How did I, a surgeon operating on a Klingon, not remember that? That's really something I should know before I cut something open.
No time for that now.
So yeah, Mitchell and
Pulaski in her place.
No, that was Crusher, actually.
No, I know.
Oh, very well. So yeah, Mitchell and Daner get zapped with this crazy ESP energy, and Mitchell suddenly becomes a jerk, or maybe he's been a jerk all along. We haven't known him long enough to know.
Yeah, that's the thing, and that's why I want to know more about this guy. Has he always been a jerk?
Yeah, it's hard to really care about somebody, like telling us that he's the captain's best friend when we've never even met the captain before.
Mm-hmm.
Really doesn't help us have a tremendous amount of sympathy, and we saw him for maybe 5 minutes leering over women, and that's pretty much all he did.
Of course, you know, everyone was doing that at the time.
Well, and I'm in that sense, I'm kind of glad that he ended up dead, because, I don't know, two Kirks on the same ship might have been too much.
Yeah, Amok time would have been about them fighting over Spock's wife. Anyway, so Mitchell's got his magic silver eyes now, and he's feeling awesome, and he's moving shit around.
Yeah. He's getting gradually more, like, more magic or whatever.
More less human.
And Daner has this really strange argument when they're talking about what to do with him, where she's like, well, maybe a breed of superior humans is better. Like, whoa, really?
Well, gee, Daner, maybe you should think about the eugenics war for a while.
That's basically, she sounded like a eugenicist. She sounded like, well, he's better than we are, so maybe, like, why is that bad? He's
superior to us. We could all be better. How awesome his eyes look. Look at the lasers that can come out of them. Anyway, so Mitchell's reading everything on the ship, like all of the literature. He's moving stuff around with his mind. He's creeping everyone out and talking about how awesome he is.
Yeah, he drops the word God at one point.
And all Spock wants to do is kill him.
From minute one, as soon as they start discussing options, Spock's like, kill him. Now,
Captain, there's nothing we can do but kill him. I don't really want to kill him, Spock. Well, you have to kill him.
Do it, do it. The thing is, one of the things they said about the cage, one of the reasons they rejected it, was get rid of that satanic-looking guy.
Yeah, and
how much more satanic can you get than a pointy-eared guy who keeps telling the main guy to kill someone? I mean, he's like a devil on his shoulder.
You literally could see him like leaning over Kirk's shoulder going, you know, you could kill him.
Come on, kill your best friend. Do it.
You know you want to. It's easy.
I think it was important for the writers to figure out that Vulcan, like, the Vulcan lack of emotion does not just mean, you know, making those cold, harsh decisions. Like, they had to give them a kind of compassion to balance that out.
Well, I mean, that's the thing.
Otherwise, that's all Spock would be.
Yeah.
And
the other thing that, like, a lot of people don't get is that, like, he has emotions.
Well, that, and all Vulcans do. But, I mean, their basic philosophy has to respect life.
Yeah.
Like, it turns out that they're vegetarians and they are compassionate. They just don't openly display that compassion.
Yeah. But
they can't just be these cold, you know, kill them, fuck it. Like, they can't be like that. Then they work that balance out later. But early on, I can see the approach of, you know, reading the Bible of the show and saying, well, okay, he's the cold, logical one, so he would just want to kill everything. Not really.
Well, I mean, at that point, we hadn't even established that Spock did, you know, he didn't use his emotions and he was all about logic. He was just a jerk.
No, he did mention a couple of times, like, that was the whole thing about him telling Kirk, like, I can make the hard choices because I don't have your human feelings.
I guess that's true, yeah. I don't feel your earth annoyance.
I do love a good expression, a good, your earth blank. Quite enjoy that.
We briefly consider your earth podcast for this.
So yeah, while Mitchell's reading up on everything, he drops the line to Kirk, Yeah, I've been reading this long hair stuff. Which really jumped out at me. Like,
yep. Even in the future, hippies.
Apparently so. Hippie stuff is ESP, I guess. I don't fucking...
Well, we'll be getting more of that in Way to Eden. The episode that makes Spock's brain look good.
Nothing makes Spock's brain look good. I've watched it in the restored, like, enhanced, still terrible. So they finally get him down to a planet.
The idea is that they have to go to this planet and get either dilithium or lithium to repair the Enterprise's engines, which are broken.
Or the Enterprise is depressed and they need lithium. That's what it is.
And Spock suggests stranding Mitchell there.
Yeah, now that's Kirk's solution for everything. Just maroon someone on a planet. That'll never bite me in the ass.
The universe is littered with planets where he's left people who pissed him off.
Either all knocked of them, up a chick and wandered away, or left them marooned on a planet, or both.
All of them waiting for the other planet in the system to explode so that the climate can change.
Mitchell.
It wasn't as good a title.
No, not really. I think Jordan Baker pretty much ruined Mitchell was the problem.
Erno.
So yeah, they make it down to this planet.
They are considering dumping Mitchell. Oh, and the factory on this planet looks so cool.
Yeah, the sets on that planet were surprisingly good.
Oh my god, just amazing.
Now, we should point out going forward, apart from the cage, I am watching the restored, like, fancied up Blu-ray ones, and Matt's watching the original 60s ones.
Yes.
And so I often can't tell what's new and what isn't, but it's cool to hear that was always there. Like, they didn't spruce it up, I don't think. It was just cool.
So we dump Mitchell on the planet. He proclaims that he's a god, and Kirk decides that there's really no choice except to kill him.
What does God need with a starship, anyway? Do they ever?
I think God just likes starships, you know?
Very well.
Wants them flying around. And Damer... what the hell is her name?
Daner.
Daner is like... Oh, I want to stay with Mitchell and, I don't know, worship him or something.
I wasn't really clear on what was supposed to happen there. If he was subordinate to him, if they were equals.
If he was controlling her, I was thinking that for a while.
There's no room in his world of space gods for women.
Anyway, Mitchell strangles some dude from the ship with a wire, which was awesome.
Yeah, that was pretty brutal. And that explains why, you know, why we never saw that guy again, at least.
Mm. And then Kirk decides, well, I personally have to kill him because he's my friend and it's my responsibility. And he gets a phaser rifle, which is so fucking cool looking.
Yeah, the look of the early phasers and the phaser rifle was kind of an extension of that. It was more like transistory with like the coils and like...
Everything was very ray gun looking, you know?
And they gradually moved away from that, which is too bad because I really enjoyed that look.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, like, there was a, you know, the evolution of that to sort of a more streamlined phaser. And then eventually when we got to next gen, the dustbusters.
Or the remote controls. That shot lasers. Yeah, I wasn't a big fan of those, but
no, but
I understand having to evolve them and so on.
But and we never see the phaser rifle again, which is too bad because it looks so cool.
I think you do, actually, but I don't think
it looks
like that.
Not in the original series. I know TNG.
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm pretty sure in the original series you do, but not that one. Like, I think a redesigned one.
It looks badass. I'm looking at a picture of it right now, and I want one. Anyway, so Kirk, Mitchell, and Denner fight for a while, and Denner builds Kirk a grave.
Ah, yes.
With the infamous James R. Kirk on it. Something, a stupid little production error from the second pilot that people in the expanded universe have been working for years to retcon.
I would not even call it a production error. I don't think they knew yet.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not like the production Bible said every, you know, he was born in Iowa on Earth at this date. His middle name is Tiberius. Like, they flesh that stuff out as they go. Not every detail is in place yet.
Yep.
And something that you need to know about me and Matt, and we said this at the beginning, we'll repeat it. We don't care.
Mm.
If they make a minor mistake, but the story's still good, who cares?
Yeah. It's a TV show.
It does not take me out of it. I mean, I'll laugh at it because it's funny. Mm-hmm. I know it's not R. Kirk, and that gave me a little giggle, but overall, it doesn't affect my enjoyment. It doesn't ruin anything. It's just, you know, it's just a show. You should really just relax.
So anyway, Mitchell continues trying to kill James Riberius Kirk.
And we get the first appearance of the Kirk sucker punch.
Mm-hmm.
And Kirk losing Kirk's his shirt.
I love the way Kirk fights with his two-fisted punch and his falling down so he can kick a guy.
Apparently, and if anyone listening, well, first of all, if anyone's listening, thank you, because we know we're reaching out to a bit of more of a specialized audience here. But if anyone listening knows about, like, fighting styles and stuff, I have read, and I don't know enough to really know if this is true or not, that there is an actual logic to it. Like, there's some kind of, I don't know, jujitsu, or I know nothing about this, so I'm completely out of my element here. But if anyone knows about actual fighting styles and history and stuff and can explain to me, you know, if there is some kind of logic to Kirk or if it's just Shatner flailing around, drop us a line. I'd love to hear that.
Yeah. Anyway, so Denner realizes that Mitchell is crazy and not, you know, probably not the best person to base the rest of your life around. And she uses her psychic powers to weaken him. And then Kirk drops a rock on him.
Buried alive. Buried alive.
And then leaves.
And then we get our great scene at the end where Kirk says, "Mr. Spock, I believe there's some hope for you after all."
And thus began that tradition.
Yeah, not a bad episode. Still fairly ponderous, I would say, actually. Like, yep. There's some action, but there's still a lot of, you know, cerebral, like, you gotta really pay attention. You gotta know what's going on, and they don't really spoon feed you a lot of, like, you just have to buy into the fact that there's ESP and all that. And again, for the 60s, that's kind of a leap.
Like, yeah,
not a ton of that going on.
Don't assume you sort of know what they're talking about, and if you don't, you'll get it if you just, you know, pay attention.
The thing that really amazed me was knowing that they had just basically tossed the cage out and started over. They didn't spend any time, actually, in the cage, come to think of it, too. They didn't really explain what the transporter was. They stepped in this thing, they turned all glittery, and then they were on the planet. You just had to, they didn't have to say, "This transporter beam that sends our atoms across the blah, blah, blah." Nope. Just, you had to pick it up. And I mean, it's a weird thing to fixate on, but really, it's, I like that they're not talking down to us. I enjoy it.
Yeah. I mean, and now, I mean, it feels like common sense, you know, like, oh, it's teleportation. We all get that. But I mean, back then it must have been like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah. But, you know, I really didn't feel condescended to.
No.
I felt like I wouldn't call it intelligent exactly, but it wasn't dumbed down, which, you know, again, for television is quite impressive. But overall, nobody was the way they will be later. Like,
no,
I mean, you could really throw out this episode and it would not affect anything at all.
Yeah, everything sort of makes sense later.
I mean, it's good and I liked it, but it really, the characters don't act anything like they'll act later, and half the people aren't even in place yet, and Gary Mitchell was never heard from before or since. And
yeah. Here's what I'd like to know. If you watched both of those and had no idea of what was going to come, which of those two would you rather see go to series?
Oh, well, definitely The Cage, because I like Pike better. I like the idea of number one. The whole production value is more appealing to me. Just everything about it. Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, exactly the same. You don't really get a whole lot of sort of what Kirk's about in the first one.
Yeah, you really get some nice peaks. I mean, setting an episode sort of inside Pike's mind is a really nice way to tell you what he's all about neatly in an hour. Like, that was some smart sort of economic storytelling there. DS9 did the same thing. Its pilot, a lot of it sort of took place in Sisko's head. So by the end of that, you have a really good idea of who your captain is, because you've
spent
some time seeing what he thinks about. And, you know, whereas with Kirk, it's just like, well, he had this friend who's dead. He likes to take his shirt off. That's pretty much
he loves to take his shirt off. And and he likes chess.
So yeah, I would definitely. But again, we're coming at this from, you know, I mean, I was born in the 70s. You were born in the 80s. Like, we're coming at this from not the same angle as a 60s TV viewer, too.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe they like the other one better. Or maybe, you know.
I
guess we'll never know.
I think that the show really needed to sort of, like, once it got past Where No Man Has Gone Before, it really sort of needed to, you know, start establishing itself.
Yeah.
Well, and it did.
And there wasn't very much serialized storytelling. That there wasn't a lot of setting up things that would happen later.
No.
Because we're used to that now, but it wasn't really a huge factor in television back then. So you lose a lot of, like, it doesn't matter that it's James R. Kirk, because next week it'll be T Kirk, and you know, it might as well be a whole new universe that it takes place in anyway. That's just the
way exactly.
They didn't think people would be watching them over and over again and scrutinizing them. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So, that's the first two pilots.
There's an old Vulcan proverb.
Matt, you got a quote from... we're going to try and pick our favorite quotes. You got a quote from Where No Man's Gone Before?
My favorite quote from Where No Man Has Gone Before.
Have I ever mentioned you play a very irritating game of chess, Mr. Spock?
Irritating? Ah, yes. One of your Earth emotions.
Oh, you'll know what irritation is, Spock, when Bones shows up.
Yeah. Dr. McCoy hasn't arrived yet, but somewhere out there is a shuttle on the way to the Enterprise with a very angry man in it.
And you will know our Earth irritation. My line that I chose from The Cage, which is also a Spock line, you really need it in context, like picking it out on its own. It's not super funny, but you have to see when they're on the transporter pad and the crew beams away and only the women go, Spock just suddenly starts and very Shatner-like says,
I forgot about that.
That's so completely I say out of character. We'd seen the character for all of 20 minutes to that point, but what we know about the character later, it's just such a not Spock thing to say. And such a not Spock way to say it. And then we have our other feature in the future.
Poverty, disease, war, they'll all be gone within the next 50 years.
In The Cage, we are introduced to the idea that man has broken the time barrier. Mm-hmm. No idea what that means. We'll never come back to it again, but...
it's just, broken.
Just know, in the future, we have broken the time barrier.
So we got that going for us.
And what do you got from Where No Man's Gone Before?
In the future, information will be stored in flying space barbecues.
Very nice.
Mm-hmm.
All right, folks. Well, we have run way longer than we expected to, but it doesn't really surprise me at all.
Mm-hmm.
I thought we would be 30 minutes max. We're coming up on an hour here.
Ha!
We'll try to keep that a little shorter next time.
Then again, so much for your notions of timing.
I guess we haven't broken the time barrier yet. but until next time, keep doing that.
Keep watching the skis.
All right, we'll be back next week.
The Post-Atomic Horror Podcast is published weekly and is available via iTunes or on the web at postatomichorror.com. This program is a co-production of Ron Algar Watt and Matt Robotham, and all original material contained herein is their intellectual property unless otherwise noted. All clips and references from Star Trek and related media are used without permission from CBS, Viacom, and/or Paramount Pictures. Fair use is assumed for the purposes of review and parody, and the aforementioned co-producers do not receive any form of profit for this effort. Listener feedback can be sent to podcast@postatomichorror.com. An on-air response is guaranteed.